Well, I'm stuck in private prison, and Lord, it tortures me.
Hello, beautiful humans.
There you go.
I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, private prisons. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Tymie. Hi, everybody. So today we're going to talk about private prisons. And this was a listener request from a former student, Catherine Spencer.
Thank you, Catherine. I did not. Maybe I did.
She was a professor's dream come true.
Okay.
She never missed class. She participated. Yes. She had her assignments in days ahead of time. Oh, she was so thorough.
Wow.
So, Catherine, thanks for the suggestion.
Yeah, thanks, Catherine.
We miss you.
Okay.
All right, so today I'm going to turn the tables on you, Tymie.
Okay.
Well.
Yes.
How the turntables have turned.
Okay.
So we're going to play private prison, true or false.
Okay, I'm ready.
True or false, the majority of prisoners in the U.S. are incarcerated in private prisons.
False.
Definitely false. There's only a small proportion of prisoners incarcerated in private prisons, less than 10%.
Yes.
All right. True or false? Private prisons are much cheaper to operate than public prisons.
This one's tricky because I know that private prisons will do things to cut corners to increase profit. So maybe that makes them cheaper to operate. I don't know. True?
There's definitely the impression or the potential criticism that private prisons might be cutting corners.
Yes.
To save money. And yes. the whole reason for private prisons, which we'll talk about, is that they were proposed to be a cheaper alternative to public prisons. But they're not really.
Right.
So
okay.
Research has not shown really any major cost differences.
Gotcha. So
they're
I
definitely
missed that one.
Not made much more cheap
okay.
to run and operate.
Missed it.
All right. True or false? The conditions of private prisons are much worse than public prisons.
I'm going to say true.
Well, this is one of the primary criticisms yes. of private prisons. And yes. again, research does not show much difference. So they're not yeah. much better, but the criticisms that private prisons are just horrific hellscapes
yes.
does not really bear out in the literature either.
Gotcha.
All right, true or false? Two okay. more. Serving time in a private prison leads to more recidivism compared to public prisons.
I'm going
to
say there's probably not much of a difference, so I'm going to say false.
Wrong. Okay. So we're going to talk about the research.
Okay.
But this is one of the things where there does seem to be some difference,
okay.
potential. That,
okay.
You know, exposure to time in private prison is associated with a little bit higher recidivism risk.
Interesting. Yeah.
So far there's been no difference, but this is one of them. So,
man, I'm failing this quiz.
Well, I mean, I am well known for my difficult, tricky
okay.
exams. So
yes, Dr.
maybe
Reed.
I made this too tough.
Too hard.
All right, finally, true or false, private prison lobbying has been a major contributor to harsher criminal justice policy, thereby increasing the problems of mass incarceration.
Okay, this one's not fair because it's what we are learning in research methods class right now, that this is a double-barreled question mm-hmm. where you're asking two questions in one, and so it's impossible mm-hmm. to answer
yep.
unless both of those statements were either true or mm-hmm. false.
You got me there.
So I don't know. I'm just going to say true.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are definitely some notorious examples of private prison companies sponsoring controversial bills like the Texas policing bill that gave local police officers the authority to check drivers' immigration status. So they
yes.
were a major sponsor of that.
Okay.
And there's not been any direct studies of this, but in looking at like private prison lobby
mm-hmm.
money, it is just kind of a drop in the bucket compared to lobby money that
for other things,
Legislators get from other areas.
Yeah.
So,
gotcha.
You know, they've definitely been involved in lobbying, but
right.
whether or not that's had a major impact on policy or mass incarceration. And of course, we know the vast majority
yeah.
of people are in public prisons
yes.
anyway. So we're going to talk about all this again in more detail. But overall, other than recidivism, the research
okay.
does not show a whole lot of difference in all of these outcomes between
okay.
public and private prisons.
Gotcha. So should we explain what private prisons are?
Oh, show. We definitely need to do that.
Yes.
So private prisons or private corrections is when like private for-profit corporations like obviously not these, but like Coca-Cola or yes. Target, you know, private companies yes. are contracted by the state, and by state that could be states or federal government. We've talked before about how there are 51 different correctional yeah. systems in the United States mm-hmm. To accomplish some function of a prison or corrections. And most well known is the idea of a private prison, where a private company builds and operates a prison and the state pays that company to house prisoners right. for the state. So legally, prisoners are still considered in the custody of the state. I get this question a lot yes. in class. Legally, they're still in the custody of the state, but the contract yes. allows the private company to house, to monitor, to care for those prisoners. And you can also have like a private company be contracted to like operate a prison or take over a publicly built or previously operated prison. So there's a lot of different options there. And most commonly, these contracts, private prisons, are paid a fee per day of confinement for individuals. So the contract, you know, these private companies are basically, you know, given a fee
yes.
for one person for every day of confinement that they are incarcerated.
Gotcha.
And increasingly, private companies are private prison companies, corrections companies are expanding into things like reentry centers, halfway houses, community supervision centers, and more recently, immigrant detention centers. Mm-hmm. And in contrast to the private prison situation in 2017, almost 70%, 67% of all detained undocumented immigrants were held in private detention facilities.
Yikes.
Yeah, which is concerning.
Yeah.
So everything that we're going to talk about today is about studies of private prisons mm-hmm. in, you know, harken back to our jails versus prisons. The detention right. facilities are more like federal jails. Mm-hmm. So the research has been on federal prisons for, you know, convicted individuals, not immigrant detention facilities.
Okay.
So it is important to note that what we're going to talk about today may not be generalizable to yeah. immigrant detention facilities, yeah. which private facilities is the rule of the day. For those. And there are good reasons to think that, you know, there are significant differences between those two types of facilities and why
right.
This might not be generalizable there. But there are two companies in particular, CoreCivic, which mm-hmm. used to be called CCA, Corrections Company of America.
Yes.
And Geo Group, which used to be called Whack-A-Nut.
Yeah.
which is a hilarious name. I think about like whack-a-mole. Yeah, so they've got their fingers in all kinds of yeah. Juicy little pies.
Yes.
But they're the biggest players, CoreCivic and Geo Group, the biggest players in the private industry. And both are traded companies, publicly traded companies with stock values of $22 to $23 million. Well, there's definitely money to be made, as
right.
we will talk about.
Mm-hmm. So what's the reason for private prisons? What's the rationale behind having them?
Well, on that note, as we were just talking about,
cha-ching,
dollars, baby. So money, as yes. you know, I mentioned earlier that the initial reason for private prisons was that there was the idea that it could be cost effective.
Right.
So we're going to do another episode in the future on overcrowding and mass incarceration. But for a while, we probably need to take a break from prison episodes. This is
yes.
our third episode on prisons. So maybe at some time in the future.
Yeah.
But anyway, just a quick brief overview. In the 70s, we changed the way that we do prisons and punishment from rehabilitation to the get tough era.
Uh-huh.
And in the 80s and 90s, in addition to that, we implemented a lot of super harsh sentencing practices and
right.
policies, mandatory minimums, get tough,
yep.
Resulting in what scholars refer to as the era of mass incarceration.
Yes.
And at the height of mass incarceration, we had over 2 million people in prison, which mm-hmm. created all kinds of problems of overcrowding, exploding correctional costs. And private prisons were proposed as a solution to address both of those problems. Build
right.
more prisons.
Let the market solve it.
Yes. Yeah, it's the old adage that, you know, government inefficiency, and if people are concerned yeah. about making money and profitability, then they'll find more efficient and cheap ways to
yes.
do the same thing that the state does. But the idea of private prisons is controversial because, as we've already indicated,
yes.
you've got private companies and people making money and getting rich off of punishment, incarceration,
yeah.
and off the backs of prisoners. So the more money there are, the more prisoners there are, the more money to be made.
Yeah.
So, you know, privatization might encourage or increase the problems that they were proposed to solve in the first place.
Imagine that.
One of the more, if not the most notorious cases involving private prisons is called the Kids for Cash scandal. I'm sure you're familiar with this. Yeah. Maybe a lot of people are. There's a documentary, I think it's on Netflix somewhere, and it's called Kids for Cash, but it was several judges in Pennsylvania who were essentially accepting juvenile court judges for
kickbacks,
kids.
Kickbacks, yeah.
Who were accepting bribes from a private local private prison to send kids to prison.
Yes.
So essentially, you had the money that the private prison was making, and they were paying judges to send more kids prison, and you had kids
to increase their profits.
Yeah, you had kids going to prison, which in the juvenile justice system, incarceration is supposed to be the last resort.
Yes,
and you had kids going to prison for throwing like a beefsteak at their dad over the dinner table, and you know, like ridiculous things like that.
Cases. Yeah.
As I hinted in one of my true false questions, it's also been speculated that private prisons will cut corners, to save costs. So. There's a concern that private private prison conditions will be worse since they're trying to save money. So, like, they might hire less staff. They might be more dangerous. Might be, like, worse physical conditions, worse food, worse medical care. But anyway, more generally, there doesn't seem to be any major differences in a lot of these outcomes.
Gotcha.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Okay, so what's the scope of private prisons? How many people are locked up in private prisons?
So we've talked about you know, prison populations before. Prison data collected by the BJS indicates 1.2 million people in prisons in 2021.
Yes.
And the prison population has been declining. The preliminary data for 2022 is out, and it looks like incarceration rates are up by 2%.
Yes.
This is a side tangent. So that may be a bounce back from kind of like the slowdown of COVID, or it could be an indication of a change in trends. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
But anyway, in 2021, 96,500, almost 100,000 prisoners were held in private facilities. And that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
But that's only 8% of the total prison population.
Yeah, it's not a big proportion of that.
A greater proportion of federal prisoners were held in private facilities compared to state. In 2021, so 13% of federal prisoners were held in private facilities compared to 7% of state prisoners.
Yes.
The federal system, the Bureau of Prisons, Florida, Texas, and Tennessee were the jurisdictions with the most number of prisoners, the greatest number, and obviously, you know, like Florida, Texas, big states, biggest prison populations in general. But Montana, New Mexico, and Tennessee were the jurisdictions with the greatest proportion of prison populations.
Interesting.
So almost half of Montana prisoners in 2021 were held in private facilities.
Okay, so maybe fewer people in private prisons than some might think, but back to the true false question.
So a lot of the arguments behind private prisons been, like I said, that they'll save money, save space, be more efficient. And the criticisms have been that they'll be less safe, have bad conditions, and so on and so forth. And these are important empirical scientific questions that research can answer. But surprisingly, there's not a ton of good, strong studies that have attempted to answer those questions. So not a whole host of studies, but there is, you know, a small body of research. And, and most of what I'm going to talk about comes from a piece that was written in Criminology and Public Policy by Gerald Gaius. And Criminology and Public Policy is like the policy wing of the flagship journal in criminology. And, and Gaius is one of the leading scholars in corrections in prison. So as we intimated, the central role, the central rationale for privatization of prisons was been to save money.
Right.
And there's no, you know, studies have found no significant differences between private and public prisons in terms of cost or cost savings. And certainly there aren't any major cost savings of using private prisons. So, you know, it's kind of difficult to quantify numbers and there's always controversy about how do you assign dollars to these types of things. But
yeah, overall, there doesn't seem to be any savings.
And there's definitely not majors, so the, major, so they're not much cheaper. Much cheaper.
Not to justify their existence.
Yeah, for sure. You know, on the other hand, the major criticism of privatization has been kind of like the quality, cutting corners.
Right.
And there's been some studies that have compared public and private prisons on things like safety, violence rates, health care, quality conditions, access of health care, physical conditions of the prisons, like number of programs and number of activities. And similar to the cost question, that, you know, there's no doesn't seem to be much difference in conditions between public and private prisons. So the research doesn't really bear that question out. But that doesn't mean that, you know, prison conditions are great. If we're talking about public to private prisons, that's like the bars on the floor there.
Yeah.
You know, conditions in public prisons aren't, wonderful either. So the analogy that I thought about is like public-private prisons. You've got these two delicious pieces of cheese, and they both have the same amount of mold on them. They're both covered in mold.
Yeah.
So that's,
you know,
there's no difference in public and private prison, but both pieces of cheese are covered in mold.
Gotcha.
Another important question is recidivism.
Yes.
And without going too far down the methodological rabbit hole, because this is a tough and complicated question, because, you know, given the nature of prisons and how prison systems operated, prisoners are shuffled around and transferred. So you can have, you know, prisoners serving time in public and private and transferred back and forth. So it is a methodological nightmare.
For researchers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this would make like your research method students' heads explode.
Well,
to,
if they were even paying attention,
well,
which is debatable at this point in the semester.
That's for sure. But in terms of like the quality of studies, this is one of the questions where there have been some better studies, what us researchers call quasi-experimental methods.
Nice.
Propensity score matching, instrumental variable analysis.
Well, they're not learning any of that, but they did learn about quasi-experimental design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So statistically, you know, it's not a true experiment, but some of the best statistical estimates. And these studies have indicated that privatization seems to be associated with slightly higher odds of recidivism compared to public prisons.
Okay. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Time served in like misconduct, getting in trouble in prison is another criticism that, you know, private prisons have been criticized, and the, you know, speculation is that they will be more likely to rot their prisoners up to keep them locked up longer, extend their stay in prison, take away their time served.
You don't want to release anyone. There go your dollars.
Yeah, you're making money off of that.
Yeah.
Only one study has addressed this question, so interpret with caution.
Yes.
But it was the same one with the same rigorous methods and found that time served was about 4% longer or 60 days longer in private prisons compared to public prisons.
No incentive for release. Mm-hmm. Or early release.
Yeah, so it does seem like, you know, prisoners in private prisons may be more likely to get written up.
Yeah.
And to get in trouble.
Gotcha.
We talked about the lobbying argument that I mentioned before.
Yeah.
And although there are certainly some sticky instances and examples of this, the analysis indicates that, you know, like I said, the amount of money that the private prison lobby contributes to legislators is relatively small, a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, I imagine the oil lobbyists spend a lot more money.
Yeah, and you know, the biggest attention and concentration is on those public prisons.
Gotcha. Okay, so in light of all of this, what should we do about private prisons?
Well, you know, one argument is to eliminate private prisons. Overall, the scholarly consensus is that there's no difference in public and private prisons, no cost savings, no difference in quality, maybe higher recidivism rates. So private prisons aren't really doing what they were supposed to be doing and are overcomplicating things unnecessarily. You've got to go through all of these contracts and payments. So, you know, if they're not doing what they're supposed to be, what is the value of private prisons? And it's important to reiterate that, you know, when research shows no difference between public and private prisons, that's not saying everything's fine. I'm thinking about like that meme where you've got like the cartoon dog sitting at the table and the house is on fire.
Yeah,
around
it's like everything's fine.
Yeah, everything's fine. Yeah. No, no problems here. You know, private prisons aren't much different from public prisons, but public prisons are a failure at stopping crime. Two-thirds of people released from prison are rearrested within 3 years, and half are sent back.
Those are huge numbers,
Public prison conditions are less than stellar. You know, we've seen lots of examples of horrific public prison conditions, and public prisons are expensive.
Yes.
Private prisons aren't cutting those costs. So in terms of the, you know, empirical objectives, private prisons aren't accomplishing anything.
Yes. Yeah.
And then there's the moral argument, the philosophical argument.
Right.
It may be unethical for people to be making money off of the punishment of crime.
Yeah.
So punishment of crime is a state function.
Yes.
And even the most like hardcore libertarians would cede that power to the state and say that's a state power.
Yes.
So should for-profit businesses be involved in the administration of criminal punishment? And should they be making money off of that? Or should that be solely a state function?
Right. No.
No what? Explain your no.
Well, I mean, I was going to save this for my...
Okay.
Spin.
Yeah. Okay. We'll come back to that for the spin. But, you know, personally, my opinion is no, also. Like, I think it is, you know, the punishment of crime should be something that the state administers.
Yeah.
And for profit companies should not have their hands in that.
Yeah. They should get their hands out of a lot of stuff. Yeah. But that's a tangent we will not get on in this episode.
And it's icky.
Yes.
To think about people getting rich off of.
Yeah. Don't go there. You're getting into my spin.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. The other suggestion is that like you could potentially implement performance-based contracts. So the contracts now are kind of, you know, pretty broad. And, but again, this is just kind of like tinkering with something that doesn't really show
much difference.
Yeah.
Splitting hairs on something that's completely unnecessary.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, the potential idea is that you can have requirements, you know, based on like recidivism and quality and staffing and those types of things written into the contract. And if the private prison doesn't meet those standards, then they would lose the contract.
Ick. All right. And they don't have any accountability, right? Like that's the big.
Well, I mean, so that's like the goal of the performance-based contract is to implement some accountability on private prisons.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. You got anything else?
Why? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do indeed. So I think oftentimes critics of private prisons as an entity get so focused on that idea that oftentimes we miss the bigger picture.
Yeah.
The more widespread issue. Remember that only 8% of prisoners are in private prisons compared to 90% in state or public prisons. And one thing that often gets overlooked is that a big chunk of private money actually comes from those public prisons through contracts for services.
Right.
So you've got all kinds of private companies involved in delivering services in public prisons. It's difficult to estimate how much, but one report in 2018 indicated that half of the $80 billion spent on corrections was given to 3,100 different private vendors.
Yes.
That might be an overinflation because we know like the biggest cost in corrections is personnel, but there are a lot of private contractors providing all kinds of public services. So including things like medical, dental, transportation, food, commissary, communication, banking, money transfer, entertainment.
Yes.
So I know when I taught my prison class, the prisoners had these devices that look almost like cell phones, like the pre-smartphone generation.
Right.
And they could email and they could, you know, like play games and listen to music. Yeah. But they had to go like plug in to the app store essentially. So there was a station and they could go and plug in and they had to buy these games and they had to, you know, like pay for these download of songs. And of course that was a contracted private company operating this JPay system.
At least they give them something to do.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Aramark is particularly notorious because they also feed us here on campus and they're heavily involved in prison food.
Yes.
And two particular controversial aspects that I want to mention here, commissary and telecommunication.
Yeah.
So commissary is like the store that you can buy in prison.
Right.
And, you know, they're going to have like, it's kind of like a, like, I almost said dollar store, but they're definitely more expensive than dollar store.
Oh, yeah.
But kind of like a convenience store. You can go and buy like food and snacks and hygiene items.
Yes.
And in fact, many states require, I know South Carolina was one of these, require prisoners to buy their own hygiene items at the commissary.
Right.
So you don't get toothpaste.
Shampoo,
you don't get soap.
Yeah.
You don't get deodorant. If you want that, you have to buy that
yourself.
And like I said, commissary prices are comparable, maybe a bit higher to convenience store prices. But remember that prisoners get paid about 20 cents. An hour.
Yeah, for maybe making the desk that we're currently sitting at.
Yeah, I've heard that prisoners make Jamie furniture.
Yes.
I've never confirmed that, but I've definitely heard that for sure. Even more problematic is telephone services. So private companies operating phone services and inmates have to pay for those phone services.
Right.
And oftentimes they can be more expensive than telephone services on the outside. So communication companies kind of compete for exclusive contracts with states.
Yes.
And if they get them... Obviously, that means that they're, you know, have to charge individuals more to cover those costs of lowballing. Anyway, right. So they can charge more for state local calls, as much as like $1 per minute. So prisoners have to pay these outrageous fees to talk to their families or friends.
Yeah, and I'm sure most people in the public have no idea about this kind of stuff mm-hmm. either, you know, and unless you have someone in prison
right.
that you mm-hmm. are trying to get services.
And, you know, we say like prisoners have to pay these outrageous fees. What yes. really ends up happening is collect calls, yes. which cell phone users probably don't know exactly what.
Yeah.
What collect call, but yeah, so yeah. Most of these are
you're
calls
receiving
that the,
a collect call from mm-hmm. Augusta Correction Facility.
Yep. So the the families are the ones who have to
right.
Bear these calls. Yep. So we shouldn't just get focused on private prisons and overlook all these other ways that companies are exploiting inmates to make money.
True.
Well, that's all I have. Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say?
I do not.
Okay, then that means it's our Minute to Spin It, where we both give our takeaway from today's show. So, Tommy, what's your spin in just a minute?
Okay, my spin is let the market solve it, not abolish private prisons. Punishment for profit is gross, mm-hmm. yo. Mm-hmm. Ben, yeah, what's your spin?
I bet there's rich folks counting all the money that they've made. They've made a lot of money off my private prison stay. Well, I'm stuck in private prison, and Lord, it tortures me. Just my private prison dedication there to one of the goats, Johnny Cash.
Yeah. I love that you changed mm-hmm. the lyrics were great.
Mm-hmm. And I'm 100% certain the Big JC would not be a fan of private prisons.
No.
Mm-hmm. But it's important to recognize, as you said, that there are a lot of people making a lot of money from private corrections, from private contracts, and we need to think carefully about the ethics of people getting rich from punishment of crimes.
Indeed.
Particularly in light of the inequities in the system, yeah. racial, socioeconomic disparities for drug offenses and things like that. People are making money off of that over the over-enforcement incarceration of poor folks and people of color.
Yes.
And that's gross.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center, a nonprofit which relies on support from generous donors like yourselves. If you would like to support our educational programming, click on the link in our show notes to provide a modest donation.